Parshas Pekudei is at the end of Sefer Shmos. We are finally finishing this story of Geula, the final piece of the redemption from Egypt, as the Ramban and others explain that the redemption story doesn't end, as they point out, with leaving Egypt. That is not true Geula. That is not really the essence of redemption, but the very end, right? The whole Mishkan is, and the building of the Mishkan is also part of this, as he calls it, the Sefer HaGeula, the book of redemption. And it's only at the end of this actual, building a home for God, Kilu, in this world, and that God returns and Hashem rests his Shechina on the Jewish people. That is really the reality of the Geula. So, Parshas Pekudei, which describes, the actual, similar to how last week Vayakel was similar to Truma, right? So those were parallel to each other because one was the commands for the Mishkan and one was building it. So Tetzaveh was were the commands for building the, or for creating the clothing of the Kohanim, and Pekudei is actually making them. And then at the end of that whole process, finally the Mishkan is finished and the Mishkan can finally be put up, right? We don't often get to read Pekudei on its own, or we often read them together, right? In a leap year, we happen to split them. So this year, we're reading Pekudei by itself, just this parsha, and we are told about, finishing all of the different kelim, and Bezalel and his crew, finish all of the elements of the Mishkan and the clothing. And at the end of the parsha, we're told, and then Moshe put up the Mishkan, and then he put up the Aron, and then he set up the menorah and the Shulchan, and like it goes through each of them as the Mizbeach and the Kior, right? All of these different pieces that have come up throughout the past few weeks, as it gets to the full picture of the Mishkan, to the Chatzer, right? The wall that surrounds the Mishkan, and finally everything is complete. And then in source one, we're told at the very, at the very end of this whole process, Vayechas ha'anan es ohel moed, and the cloud covers the ohel moed, which is the Mishkan, uchvod Hashem maleyes ha'mishkan, and Hashem's kavod, Hashem's glory fills the Mishkan. V'lo yacho Moshe lavo ohel moed, and Moshe is not able to come into the Ohel Moed. Why? Ki shachan alav he'anan. Because the cloud is there. Uchavod Hashem maleis ha'mishkan. And Hashem's kavod, Hashem's glory, has filled the Mishkan. And then the Pesukim go on to explain that when Moshe is called, that's when he is able to come into the Mishkan. So when the Anan is there, when the cloud is there, Moshe is unable to enter the Mishkan until he is actually invited into the Mishkan, and when he's invited in, then he can come in and have that conversation. He can talk to Hashem. He can have that experience inside of the Mishkan. And finally, at the very end, it kind of leads into almost like the next part of the journey of Bnei Yisrael. And the Midbar is that while the Anan, while the cloud is there on the Mishkan, so they would remain camped and they would stay there until the cloud, rose. And when it lifted up, so then they knew it was time to start camping. And then it would, when it would leave the Mishkan and start to travel, they would travel. And then when it would, when it was resting on the Mishkan, that's when they would stay put. So that is, the kind of, again, like that's almost leading into the next part where they've been at Har Sinai and in theory, they would now start traveling, right? So when they start to travel, this is kind of the process. This is when they stay in one place, and this is when they travel. Parenthetically, right, we're about to hit Sefer Vayikra, and Sefer Vayikra also, they actually don't really go that far, right? They don't really travel all that much. But that would be the next stage of the travels. So on these psukim, Vayechas ha'anan, that the cloud covers the Ohel Moed, Kavod Hashem aleis ha'mishkan, His presence is resting in the Mishkan, and therefore Moshe is not able to enter the Mishkan while the Anan is there. So many of the Mefarshim were shown in Machronim.
Too thick or too dark or...
Okay.
Well, what's the reason that he isn't able to enter?
So it just says, Kishachan alav he'anan, because the cloud is resting there. That is the way it's presented. But this question is related to the fact that we have, over the course of Sefer Shmos, seen a cloud before that is resting in a place, and Moshe approached the cloud, and then what happened? What happened, right? So this is going back to Har Sinai. Right, exactly. And then he went into the cloud, right? So on Har Sinai we know that the mountain is covered with the cloud of some kind, the Arafel. We talked a little bit about some of the elements of like the deeper stages of going through, but there's a cloud. The cloud rests on the mountain. Moshe goes up the mountain, and then he goes into the cloud, right? So many of the Mefarshim deal with either outright, or it seemed kind of like implicitly. But many of the Mefarshim seem to be dealing with this question of how do you put together these two stories? Because on Har Sinai, Moshe approached the Anan, and that's exactly where he went. He went into the Anan. He went into the cloud, and he approached Hashem, and he, received the Torah. And then, fast forward to the end of our Parsha, and Moshe is faced with a cloud, and he says, Lo yachol Moshe, right? So Moshe can't go anywhere. What's he going to do? He has to wait until he's invited inside.
Well, the first time on Har Sinai, he's going up to Shemayim, so that's how you get up. That's like the elevator up.
Okay, so okay.
It could be different because where you are, but I don't know.
So maybe it's different as where you are. It's interesting when we put it together with, right, there are some of the sources in terms of like, quote unquote, like where is he at that point? And this idea that that Hashem comes down to the mountain, right? There's like a little bit of this like in between. We do have some, statements in Chazal where Moshe is like, Ola lamarom, but on the other hand, the Pesukim, right, and Rashi and others, right, clearly say that like the mountain is that like Hashem brings it down to the mountain, so he's like, where is he? Is like a little bit of a question related to that. So maybe it has to do with where he is. Maybe it has to do with what he's doing, right? What is he actually trying to accomplish? So for one example, the Or HaChaim, this is in source two, the Or HaChaim spells this out for us. Because he says, "Lo yachol Moshe." Moshe is not able to. V'hagam she'amar hakasuv v'parshas mishpatim. So even though I included the translation here because it is available. So if it's available, why not give it? It also like is very wordy, and like there's like you could see there's like paragraphs just to like fit the one line of the Or HaChaim. So if it's helpful. Please use it, and if not, then we're going to read through it anyway. So, v'loyachol Moshe v'agam she'amar hakasuv b'parshas mishpatim, even though it says in Parshas Mishpatim, v'yavo Moshe b'soche anan. Right, the pasuk literally says, and then he went into the cloud. So clearly, clouds do not impede Moshe's progress. Right, when there's a cloud, he walks into it. Right, he doesn't need the cloud to move in order to get there. Right, it says he can't go there because there's a cloud, but he just walked right into the cloud on Har Sinai. Okay, so he says, "Sham haya achar shekara ilav Hashem nasan bokoach." So it could be that the first difference is actually there's no difference. Right, the first answer is just like it says at the end of the parsha, Moshe isn't able to go until he's called. Maybe also at Har Sinai he was called, so he was called, and therefore he was able to just walk into the Anan. Right, so actually, the Or HaChaim's first suggestion is this is actually the same thing as what happened on Har Sinai. Just like at Har Sinai, Moshe was called, so to here he cannot go until he's called. Right?
So like, let me go. It's not a physical barrier. It's if you go to the king without being invited, your head comes
off. Right. So, okay. Right. So there's a difference between whether we can and whether we should. The Or HaChaim's first suggestion is that this really is the same as what happened on Har Sinai, if we look closely. O yomar al zeh haderech, or maybe you could say it like this, v'lo yachol Moshe, now he's just going to give a totally different explanation. Ve'atam ki shachan alav he'anan, right? What's the reason Moshe is not able to go? Our pasuk says ki shachan alav he'anan. The cloud is resting there. So this language of shachan, right, that this kavod Hashem is resting there, ein mitzius dek ki mitzius ha'omer b'parshas mishpatim. So it could be that the reality in the Mishkan is different than the situation that existed in the on Har Sinai. So even though we think of Har Sinai as, well, we'll spell this out afterwards, but let's say it like this, that why can Moshe not go? Not just because there's a cloud, but because Kavod Hashem, God's presence, is resting directly right there, right? So if Hashem's presence is resting there, so that's why Moshe cannot approach. On Har Sinai, right, the Anan was not directly covering or, right, going into the Anan was not a direct interaction with Hashem. It was something different. So the Or HaChaim suggests maybe the Mishkan is actually different than Har Sinai, right? Oh, why did Moshe act one way at Har Sinai and one way at the Mishkan? Because the situations were completely different, right? On Har Sinai, it was one, and it was one mitzius, right? That Hashem, the cloud was not, it's like hard for me to say because it's like funny, the cloud was not a reflection of the Shekhinah being there. Even though it was, right? Like in some sense it was. But apparently, right, entering the cloud in and of itself was not encountering Hashem. But in the Mishkan, it was. Right? There's like a way of saying this, which is like it, like the Mishkan is much smaller. Like once you enter the cloud, like that's where the Shekhinah is. Like the mountain, you know, the whole mountain is covered. So like you have to go through, as we saw with earlier, right, in an earlier share, like Moshe goes into the Anan, then there's the Arafel, especially going to Rashi, where like it's like clearly that three layers that he's walking through. So it's like, right, so maybe Har Sinai, which is much bigger, there's like a longer process before you actually approach the Shekhinah. And maybe, yeah, in fact, once you get to the very inside where the Shekhinah is resting, so then maybe Moshe is not able to go. But here the Mishkan is much smaller. So where the Anan is, that's where the Shekhinah is. Maybe it's like something like that. It still feels kind of funny to say that like one Anan is where the Shekhinah is and one is not. But that is the Or HaChaim's second suggestion that the Mitzius, the actual situation on the ground in the Mishkan, was different than what Moshe faced on Har Sinai. So these, you know, broadly, right, this point of the Or HaChaim is, a model, I guess, of two broad approaches to how you might answer this question, right? Our question is, why did the Anan stop him on Har Sinai? The Anan did not stop him on Har Sinai. So why, when it comes to the Mishkan, did Moshe not go into the Anan? So one answer is you have to figure out why. Oh, they're actually the same. You have to figure out, even though they're the same, why does Moshe act differently, right? And one approach, or the Or HaChaim says that he actually acted the same until he waited until he was called, right? So one way of dealing with this is you have to see why they're the same. And one approach is no, they're actually different from each other, right? So each of his two answers kind of takes a different way of looking at it.
Well, Hashem manifests himself in two different cloud forms, right?
Okay.
On Har Sinai, the whole mountain is, and here it's a much more confined space. But Hashem, in human terms, knows what he's doing.
Right.
And so he's giving Moshe more space on Har Sinai to explore much more content of what he wants to teach. And in the Mishkan, which is a much smaller space, he's restricting his entry into the Mishkan because the conversations are shorter, smaller, take less time, whatever. Okay. But Hashem knows what he's doing.
Right, right. So I like that. So again, that's why when I was saying these, like, this possibility that one's like, you know, Har Sinai is bigger. It's right. There's like a part of there's a way of saying that which sounds like strange. Like, why? Like, just because Har Sinai is bigger, therefore there's more space for Moshe to walk. Right. Like the way I said it was, treated.
Surely not correct.
No. But I like yours. Right. Because yours is pointing out that, right, if this is the approach to take. Right. If this is correct, then this, right, where Hashem, quote unquote, like, is in the cloud, right, is in a sense like not a physical reality. But you're pointing out that, like, it may be an expression of, like, what is the goal of this situation or what is Moshe supposed to experience, right? So it might be true that the mountain literally is bigger, but that is because the experience that Moshe has is one which is a longer process. This is the beginning of him learning the Torah. So it is actually like easing Moshe into this whole thing as he gains more and more. And again, perhaps as we saw that there are like multiple layers to the cloud, as he gets deeper and deeper into this situation, it may actually like reflect the experience of Moshe, not just like a physical walking, but the actual experience, as opposed to the Mishkan, which, as you're pointing out, even though Moshe, right, there are parallels in many other ways between the Mishkan and Har Sinai, as the Ramban elaborates in different ways, that the Mishkan is, in a sense, almost like a traveling Har Sinai, right, and that Moshe is given, right, when he goes into the Ohel Moed, that's when he learns, like, new mitzvos or new details, or he has questions that he has to deal with, right, but it's much more focused in that way, so he's not, like, as in your language, right, you're talking about like exploring a little bit, or that he's not, right? It's not about like working your way into it. It's like there's like a specific walk in order to experience this conversation with Hashem, and then move out. So, right, that is perhaps a better way of framing this idea. If this is the way we want to explain the difference, right? If we want to explain that the difference is the second answer of the Or HaChaim, right? That the cloud, one cloud has the Shekhinah right there and one doesn't, right? So you're dealing with, well, why? Why would one cloud have the Shekhinah right inside, right when I walk in, and one cloud does not have the Shekhinah right when I walk in, right? So you're helping kind of elaborate on this Or HaChaim to say, why would the cloud act differently, or why would the Shekhinah act differently in these two situations? You're saying because the experience of Moshe is supposed to be having a different experience in each of those. So that would kind of be elaborating on that answer. So this question that the Mefarshim deal with is Reish Lakish gives us two suggestions, but this is the big question. The question of how do we deal with this cloud, right? Moshe handles it in an interesting way, even though in the past, when there was an Anan, Moshe was able to walk right in. Right now, Moshe is not able to. So the Or HaChaim gave us a couple of answers, right? But I'd like to propose a different way of looking at it, a different way of understanding the way that Moshe treats the Anan when it comes to the Mishkan. So that is the big question, right? In this case, we have one broad question on the Parsha, one big question on the Parsha, which is why does Moshe act differently? Why does Moshe not enter the cloud? Essentially, that's the question. Why does Moshe not enter the cloud of the Mishkan when it seems that the clouds don't prevent him from moving? Why is it that Moshe waits until he's called? Okay, so if we put that aside for a few minutes, I want to look at the Siddur. So in Shacharis, we have right Shmona Esrei. Shmona Esrei is preceded by Kriyas Shema. Right, Kriyas Shema is surrounded by brachos, right? So you have the Birchos Kriyas Shema and then Shmona Esrei. Now, before all of that, we have this whole section called Psukei DeZimra. So Psukei DeZimra is a series of paragraphs that primarily come from David HaMelech, right? As we say in the introduction, which is the Baruch Sheamar, right? As we say, these are the tefilos, the tehilos, the prayers, the praises of David, for the most part. Now, there's one major exception, which I'm not going to discuss. Why do we put it in Psukei Dezimra at all, right, when it doesn't seem to fit the rest? But the one major exception to that rule seems to be Az Yashir. Okay, so in Psukei Dezimra, almost all of it really comes from David, except for one section, which is Az Yashir, the Shira Sayam, the song that Bnei Yisrael sang when they left Mitzrayim. Okay, so again, I'm not going to discuss like how did that get stuck into Psukei Dezimra, but after we read Az Yashir, okay, so we sing all of these psukim. I mean, maybe we sing it, maybe we say it, but let's, I don't know, let's sing it, why not? So we're singing Az Yashir, and then when you get to the end, we say Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Va'ed, right, this, the climax of the song, that Hashem will rule forever, Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Va'ed, and then we conclude Az Yashir with the following psukim. So this is in source 3, this is from the Siddur. Right, the way we say Az Yashir in the Siddur is, we finish Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Va'ed, and then Kivasus Paro Brichvo V'Farashav Vayam, that when Paro came with all of his chariots into the sea, into the ocean, Vayashev Hashem Aleim Esmei Hayam, and Hashem brought all of the water onto them, right, and drowned the Egyptians. Uvnei Yisrael Halchu V'Yavashav Sochayam, but the Jewish people, they walked on dry land through the sea, right? So this is in the Chumash, this is the Pasuk right after Az Yashir, right? So you have the song, you have Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Va'ed, and then we say, because, right, when Paro came into the water, the Egyptians were drowned, and Bnei Yisrael went through scot-free. There's an interesting note about the Maharal, that at the end of the song, what do we say? At the end of the song, we sing about the Egyptians drowning, and then we say, because when Paro followed them, they drowned, and we left free. And what almost feels like it should be the next part after this pasuk is to sing the song of the sea, right? That this, the Maharal points out that right after the song is a pasuk that introduces the song, and it almost, in a sense, creates like a loop, right? It almost like, this song almost goes on forever because we say Paro drowned and we celebrate. And then at the end of the celebration, we say Paro drowned and therefore we celebrate. And then, right, it almost goes on, right? So the true nature of Simcha, of Shira, of the complete song is that it actually loops on itself and it goes on forever. So that's like an observation of the Maharal. But we don't sing this forever, right? We don't end up in an infinite loop saying Psukei Dezimra forever. Right? It might feel like we're saying it forever, but we don't, right? Instead, right after this pasuk, we say, Ki lahashem hamelucha u'moshel bagoyim. For kingship belongs to Hashem. Ki lahashem hamelucha. The kingdom is God's, u'moshel bagoyim. And the rule, and rule among the nations. Which is not from Az Yashir. It's a pasuk in Tehillim. So, and then the Moshim, the saviors, the deliverers, will come up to judge the mountain of Esav. And Hashem will have the kingship, which is a pasuk in Ovadia. Again, not Shmos. And not a continuation from Tehillim that we started, but is now Ovadia. V'haya Hashem l'melech al kol haaretz, and Hashem will be the king over the whole earth. B'yom ahu yeh Hashem echad u'shmo echad. And on that day, God will be one, and His name will be one. Which is a pasuk in Zechariah. So after Az Yashir, at like the peak of our Psukei Dezimra, we throw in like a set of seemingly random psukim that, you know, from Tehillim, Ovadia, Zechariah, right? Just like throw it all in at the end. Well, a little bit of everything. And then we move on to Yishtabach.
But this shows like Hashem, not just in Mitzrayim, but the whole world is going to believe in it.
Okay. So perhaps part of the building is that we've experienced Yitzias Mitzrayim, right? And we recount the experience of that. And Hashem demonstrated, you know, his kingship, Hashem Yimloch Leolam Va'ed, even into the future, even into, right, Hashem will rule forever, including into when Esav is punished, and then Bayom HaHuya Hashem Echad Shmo Echad, right, in some future time, Hashem will be one, and his kingship will be clear to everybody. Okay, so there's something to that, right? There's something to the fact that that we're describing these things that happen, you know, just like in the past, so too in the future. What about in terms of like this specific set of these three psukim, as opposed to, I don't know, one as opposed to all of them, or is like, could they have been in any order? Is it just like any, right? Is it, is there a progression between these psukim? Is there a reason that, right? Because again, there, it's not like three psukim from like one sefer in a row. It's not like something where it's clear that like the Navi is building something, right? We take a pasuk in Tehillim, and then we take a pasuk in Ovadia, and then we take a pasuk in Zechariah. We stick them all together, right? So why those? Why in that order? What are we trying to get across when we're saying this in our davening? So we might notice there is, right, one theme, right, which we're drawing out is, right, what is
Shem's kingship,
right? So one thing which shows up in all three psukim is malchus, right, that Hashem's kingship. So we have kila Hashem hamalucha, and then v'haisa Hashem hamalucha, and v'haya Hashem lemelech al kol haaretz. So there's something, right? That's why I also pointed out, right? It's coming off of Az Yashir. The last pasuk of the actual song is Hashem yimloch li'olam va'ed, and then we have like these psukim about malchus, about kingship. So like that seems to be like a running theme through all of them. And again, maybe it's from the past, even forevermore. So maybe something like that. So the Vilna Gaon wants to go, I don't want to say one step further, but he wants to explain that these three psukim are actually in a very specific order, right? That we specifically read them in this order. And what if I want to read about the Malchus the other way around? It doesn't work the other way around. Okay? So this is how he wants to say it. So the Vilna Gaon, in his commentary on Mishlei, is perhaps one of the, the most famous commentaries of the Vilna Gaon. I mean, it's not like he has that many. Right, he has, some of the big ones are Mishlei, Sefer Yeshaya. He has a commentary on Shulchan Aruch, which is Halacha, which is like a totally different thing. But, and then he has on, the students, what?
He has on the
Parsha. Yeah, so there are bits, yeah, so there's like a Deres Eliyahu, and there's like some of these, like, which is on the Chumash. But a lot of these, I mean, what they say is a lot of these are collections of like from his students, and the ones that are like most directly connected to what the Vilna Gaon said is like, this is what they say is like Mishlei and Yeshaya, and Shulchan Aruch. And that's also why his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch is very hard to figure out, because it's basically like, it's like, like in shorthand. So his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch is like, there's like a halacha, and then he's like, check out this Gemara, and like he does explain why, and this other Tosos. And then like you're supposed to figure out like what the connection is between those pieces. I don't know. So it's like very terse, because he wrote that one himself, and it's like very like, you have to be in the know to like really follow what's going on. But Mishlei and Yeshaya, again, he's elaborating a little bit more. There's also one on the Megillah. Megillas Esther is also a big one, especially this time of year. People are learning it. So Megillas Esther is also a good one. And the Megillas Esther is a classic example. While we're just saying it, right? Megillas Esther is a classic example where the Vilna Gaon, he has three commentaries. One is Al Derech HaPshat, where he's just explaining the story. One is Al Derech HaRemez, which is not the surface layer, but is like kind of what do all these ideas represent. And one is Al Derech HaSod, which is a commentary on the Megillah based on like Kabbalistic ideas. So his commentary actually works in like multiple layers, and how like if you read through them, you see how like they're parallel to each other, and that ideas which express themselves in the physical world are also expressions of ideas and are also Kabbalistic ideas. So like so that's like one of the classic example where he actually has those three laid out for us. Sometimes he'll have only one or the other, but But Mishlei, in Mishlei, he says the following. In Perek Chav Zayin, Pasuk Chav Zayin, the Vilna Gaon says, this is in the middle of a longer, to begin with, this is a long-ish piece, but it's actually out of a longer piece. So the Vilna Gaon says the following. V'hu, ki melech, what is a king? Hu shekulam yatu shechem echad le'avdo. A king is when everybody literally like lowers their shoulder, right? Everyone leans over, everyone bows to serve the melech. V'yitnu lo keser melucha, and gives him the crown. So the when Tanakh speaks of a melech is a person, is someone, or right, is one who is given the crown by those around him. Ube'emes ha-melech be'asmo shave lishar ha'am be'echusam. But in essence, the melech is one of the people. So he would have otherwise been one of the people. He is, in a sense, shave lishar ha'am. He is equal to everybody else. Ach shekulam yamlichu aleihem. But everybody else, it's funny to like use the word melech. That's what I'm trying to like avoid that, right? The melech is when everyone is mamlechim, right? So the king is the specifically a melech is someone everyone who everybody right. Everyone coronates. Everyone makes him the king, right? So a king is made by the people.
But he's really a regular person.
Right, so he would have just been any.
Until he's made.
Exactly, right? So a melech, vikablu al malchusa, right? And they accept, ol malchusa, sorry, and they accept his malchus. So in a sense, this is also part of the idea, some of the deeper ideas when we talk about melech, is that melech is on one hand like one of the people, but also removed from the people. But this is part of it, is that Be'ichuto, right, like Be'ichutam, right, his essence in a way is the same as everyone else's, but they are mamlichim. Okay, so that's the idea of a melech. Umoshel, but when we use the term moshel, shemalchuso ba'ilav mashol, but that is when he does it, he comes to his position through force. Through power. So a Moshel takes his position, and a Melech is given his position, right? A Melech only exists because the people give him kingship. But a Moshel, right, you could have somebody who's in power because they forced their way in there, right? Because they forced everybody to accept it. So that is what Tanakh will call a Moshel. The longer piece, which I literally didn't have room for, right, is if we think back to Chumash, right, if we go back to Chumash, in Bereishis, what are the dreams that Yosef has? What do the brothers tell him, right? So the first thing the Gra does is he is differentiating between when the brothers say to Yosef, Hamaloch timloch aleinu, Hamashol timshol banu, right? What's one or the other? So they're essentially telling him, you think we would ever accept you as the king? Of course not. And what? You think you could force us to do it? Right? So those are two different things. Hamaloch timloch aleinu, imashol timshol banu, right? You think we would ever give you power? Of course not. Right? Imashol timshol banu, do you think you could ever take it from us? Of course not. Right? So those are two different things that they're asking Yosef. Okay? And the Gra says, Vizesh esidru batfila. So this is why we have it organized the following in davening, ki la Hashem hamlucha u'moshel bagoyim v'chulei v'haya Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz. Right? So you go through this whole series of psikim that we read, right? That Hashem has the melucha, v'haya Hashem l'melech, right? So what, melech kept coming up. Why does, what's the series trying to tell us? Asher yipalei lichorem, ma shekasuv achar kach, v'haya Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz, v'lo mitchila chas ha'shalom. Right, we have this pasuk. Hashem will be the king. What are you talking about? Hashem isn't the king now, right? What do you mean? Hashem will be the king in the future. What is that? Right? How do we even read that pasuk in Zechariah? Hashem l'melech al kol haaretz. Hashem will be the king. Ach ha'inyan k'mo shekasavnu. But the idea is, as he explained, She'anachnu amo beis Yisrael kibalnu ol malchuso aleinu. Because we, the Jewish people, have accepted his malchus. Ach lo chein ha'ovdei kochavim. But the rest of the world has not accepted the malchus of Hashem. Ach shehu moshel aleim kirtso no, verodev ahem kechavtso. So Hashem rules over the world. Hashem rules over all the nations, but they didn't accept him in the way that we did. So in a certain sense, in regards to the other nations, Hashem is not a melech. In a certain sense, in the other nations, Hashem is a moshel, right? So that is the first pasuk. Ki lahashem hamlucha u'moshel bagoyim. Right? So Hashem has the malchus. But when it comes to the goyim, when it comes to the other nations, Hashem currently is a moshel. Moshel bagoyim. He is ruling over them, in a certain sense, by force. Vizehu ki lahashem hamlucha ze aleinu u'moshel nikra vakutim ach shelo kiblo ulo hu moshel bahem. But he is overpowering them. Ach la'asid. But what will happen in the future? Yatu kulam shchem echad le'avdo. V'idnu lo keser melucha. But in the future, ve'alu moshim behar tzion, lishpot es har esav. What will happen? Hashem will send the Mashiach. Hashem will reveal himself. Hashem will judge the other nations. And when it becomes absolutely clear, so what will happen? V'yisal Hashem ha'melucha. So then Hashem will have the true melucha. And then v'haya Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz. And then he will in fact be the melech on the entire world. So it is a process that we are describing. Ki la Hashem hamelucha u'moshel bagoyim. Right now Hashem is a moshel in the whole world. But ve'alu moshim be'artzion lishpot es har esav. Hashem will judge the whole world and Hashem will reveal himself. Ve'yisal la Hashem hamelucha. And then he'll truly have the melucha. Ve'aya Hashem lemelech al kol ha'aretz. And then he will be the melech on the whole world. So why is it that he won't be the melech until later? Because we need this in-between stage of when the nations recognize Hashem. V'zeu v'yashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz, shel kol ha'aretz yikarei melech, kasher yikablu kol ha'aretz ol manchuso aleihem. Only after they fully accept the ol, accept the yoke of the melech, so then Hashem will truly be the melech al kol ha'aretz. So that is the process that we are describing. So when we say Hashem Yimloch Leolam Vaed, right? Perhaps it's almost a commentary on that pasuk. Hashem will rule, right? So in Chumash it says Hashem Yimloch Leolam Vaed. Hashem will rule. Well, what is the will? So we almost, he doesn't say this. I'm like kind of adding this. This is almost like a perish to that pasuk in Az Yashir. Ki Hashem Hamlucho Moshel Bagoyim, right? What does it mean, Hashem Yimloch? Because, almost, right? Because Hashem has the Malchus, but he's Moshel Bagoyim. Ve'alu Moshim, but in the future, Hashem will not. Ve'yeh Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz. And then he'll be the Melech. And that's what the Pasuk means, Hashem Yimloch le'olam v'ad. Hashem will rule in the future. So perhaps it's almost like a commentary. It's almost explaining what we mean in Az Yashir, right? To kind of put those together. Not just the Vilna Gaon, not just to say this is the process, but why do we put it here? We put it here almost as an explanation of Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Va'ed. And then it also fleshes out a little bit that we're also talking about not just in the past, not just when we experienced it in Mitzrayim, but also, right, we experienced like a microcosm of that when we accepted Hashem's Malchus, and in the future the whole world will accept it, right? So we also have that parallel where we're talking about from Az Yashir, from the past, from like a miniature version, to the future when it will be in its entirety, right? It will be the true version of it. So that is the process of from Moshel to Melech. The Vilna Gaon, right, in the later on in his commentary, I think it's important for this context because when we read the next source, right, the Vilna Gaon doesn't cite himself earlier, but I think you have to know. But it is important, it is potentially useful to know this first source because later on when he brings it up, right, he brings up the following. So this is a pasuk later on in Mishlei, which is Again, I don't exactly have room to fit the whole pasuk, but if you look at the bold words, that's the pasuk that he's explaining. The first half of that pasuk, Nagid chasar tivunos, rav ma'ashakos. A nagid, a leader who is chasar tivunos, who is lacking understanding, rav ma'ashakos. He is also, he is a great, you know, oppressor, basically, right? So a nagid who is chasar tivunos, that person is Rav Ma'ashakos. That leader who is not understanding is also a bad guy. He's also an oppressor. Okay, so what is going on? So the Vilna Gaon says, V'hanagid, shehu chasar tivunos, ve'eno moshel aleihem achu Rav Ma'ashakos. Right, so this nagid, who is lacking understanding, who doma l'ro l'dov shechumes nefashos, k'mo shekasuv achule besar sagi. Right, he is like a bear, who is endangering lives, a bear who's attacking people. Vehu hahipuch. So this type of leader who is destroying things, who's overcoming people, who's knocking people out. Hu hahipuch mitachlis olam hazeh shu osher v'chavod. This is the opposite of we'll say the language of the Gra, even though it's interesting, right? It is the tachlis. It is the goal, the end. The end of this world is osher v'chavod, is wealth and honor, right? So again, when we use the word tachlis, we think about like the goal. It's I have to acknowledge, right? The phrasing is funny to say, like, the goal of this world is wealth and honor, right? It's a little bit funny, but he's not directly quoting the pasuk, right? Is that we talk about right, that within God's power is osher v'chavod, right? That there is like the Torah is representative of the world beyond ours, right? That is the Torah. That is the world, like in Koheles, the world above the sun, right? We talk about that that there is the world, everything that is below the Shemesh, right? And there's the everything else, and there's the Torah. But this world is Osher and Kavod. Now, when we talk about what is Osher, right? Ezehu Asher, right? When we talk about what do we mean by Ashiris, what do we mean by kavod? So it's important to define those terms, right? But this world is one of osher and kavod. So when he's referring to these psukim, right? Osher, kavod. So what is osher and kavod? V'hu moshel b'chozka. This nagid, this leader, is moshel b'chozka. He is ruling with power, with strength. Hu hahipuch shel kavod. So this person who is moshel with Chozek, he is Moshe, he's ruling by force alone. That's the opposite of Kavod. Shehim Nichnam Tachtav, because true Kavod is when others are lowering themselves before you, right? When they recognize your greatness. Kavod is when others demonstrate it to you. If you think that you are going to steal Kavod, you think that you are going to grab this position of power, and then you will be honored. That is actually the opposite of kavod. Kavod is when others are nichna'im lefanav, right? When they lower themselves to you and grabbing it, being moshel b'chazaka b'chozek. That is hipuch shel kavod, right? So I think that reading these two sources in light of each other, right, to see that he's talking about this similar process, right? The idea of a melech, right, that we saw before, right? The melech is someone who has kavod. That is someone who is, those are nichna'im tachtav. People are giving him the melucha, they are giving him kavod. But someone who is moshel with strength, he is overpowering everybody else, that is in fact the opposite of kavod, right? So I like to, the way I think of this sometimes is that, right, kavod, true kavod is to be raised up. True kavod is not to push everybody else down, right? So like literally they look the same, right? The endpoint like looks the same in a sense, right? But the Vilna Gaon is explaining for us that if you look through, right, the way to understand Tanakh, the way to understand the message is that true kavod, true power comes not through taking it, but through being given that, right? That is truly the nature of kavod. So in one place he uses the language of melech, in one place he uses the language of kavod. Both of those are really rooted in Tanakh, right? But it's the same. It's the same idea that he is elaborating on, right? And to this idea, I thought it would be a nice little parallel. In the middle of page two, I quoted Dr. Keltner last time, but it worked out. I have a chance to quote him again. So his book is called The Power Paradox. Last time we actually quoted the end of the book, and this is a little bit earlier. So the thesis of his book is essentially what we have here. This is his main idea, that he starts in this chapter. He's talking about imagine when we talk about who are those who come to power. What are the stories we think of? So he, as an example, brings the Lord of the Flies, right? When we think of Lord of the Flies, what is the mashal of the Lord of Flies, right? That they're stranded, the boys are stranded on this island, and you have one reasonable young man who tries to set up a normal society, and everyone seems to, you know, is kind of interested. But then
they become cannibals.
Right, exactly. But then everything goes awry, and who actually comes to power? The one who is the angriest, and the one who is going to, you know, who gets everybody riled up, and in the end, they're all chasing Ralph, right? I think with ready to eat him, right? So those are the stories in popular culture. Those are the stories, right? Who are the right? What happens? What happens when you leave people to their own devices, right? Is that the one who comes to power is right that crazy one, right? Natural state thought experiments are a mainstay in debates about human nature, right? We talk about what is the natural state of people. Right, this like thought experiment that we have. What would people be if we took away the rules? What would people do? So remove the moral codes and conventions of society, and what instincts guide human behavior? Right. So what rules are most essential? Who gains power as groups form? Okay. On this last question, many believe that it's the most coercive, forceful, and violent individuals who earn the respect of their peers and gain power. Okay. But this belief will not fare well in the science we're about to tour. Through the rest of his chapter. But for the past 20 years, he says, I've been carrying out natural state experiments to find out how power is distributed in groups. For example, right, he says, I've infiltrated college dorms and children's summer camps to document who rises to power. I've brought entire sororities and fraternities into the lab, capturing the substance and spread of individuals' reputations within their social networks. Right. So he's saying, I'm looking at examples in the real world, right, as opposed to, this is part of it, as opposed to like a lab experiment, right? But like go out into the world and, right, talk about situations where like you don't have the regular like bounds of society, or you don't have the regular like laws, right? The kids, you have college kids, right? Right, where like the regular rules don't apply, right? So these kinds of situations where what do we find when you look at how power spreads through a group and how it's distributed and who comes to power and who has the reputation and who is recognized as being those with power, whereas the Machiavellian approach to power assumes that individuals grab it through coercive force, strategic deception, and the undermining of others, the science finds that power is not grabbed but is given to individuals by groups. That is the true power. What this means is that your ability to make a difference in the world is shaped by what other people think of you. Your capacity to alter the state of others depends on their trust in you, right? Power comes because it is given. Your ability to empower others depends on their willingness to be influenced by you, right? So power is given. It is not forced upon them. So this is the beginning of the thesis of his book is power is given. The reason power is given, right, the next step, just to flesh out part of his argument and how it fit with last time, was that power is given. Power is given to those who are giving to others. And the paradox is what we saw last time, which is, and also when you are given that power, you tend to lose your ability to take others' perspectives, right? We talked about the boss and the cookie eating last time. That was the actual experiment, was that once someone was assigned to be in charge of other people, they like ate more cookies than everybody else. And they, right, like they were more rude than everybody else. So power is given. Power is given because of your like social abilities. And then on the other hand, the paradox is once you now have that power, it is very difficult to maintain that correct social standing. And that's the paradox. So that's why the two fit.
The way that it countries in the world that run counter to.
So there is a bit of even within his experiments, right? You have to figure out there are parts of. First of all, I think you would argue that not exactly, because a lot of even those, what they're actually giving, right, is like even people who, in a sense, are given power, they may not be given it for – they may not be doing it for altruistic reasons, but they are still given power as opposed to taking it. And that even when you take it, it doesn't last long enough, meaning that like there is like – right, there is a part of this where some of his experiments are also looking at what we would call like extroversion, right? And he's labeling some of these extroverted, these outgoing behaviors as like reaching out to others, right? One of the reasons that extroverts like gain power is because they are good at reaching out and they connect to others and things like that. But there is some reason to think also from life and from lab experiments also that trait of extroversion, which is what he's focusing on a little bit in the next couple of paragraphs, is a predictor of leadership emergence, but that it doesn't necessarily last. If you look at it over time, that actually people start to see through that and then realize that doesn't really work, right? So again, in a lot of times, like over time, it starts to dissipate, right? And then in a country, you may have worked yourself into a situation where, again, like when we talk about power and influence, like they may literally be the one who like now has an army and you can't stop them. Right, but that's not like the people who came to often, not always, but like many of the people who came to power and then stayed there by force, but they actually were given power because people believed in what they were actually saying. They also may have believed in what they were saying, and they were actually setting a vision for what the country could look like. And then once they came to power, they now didn't want to let go or didn't want to actually run it the way that they said they would. Right, so we can think of like right. I mean, if we talk about right, there are examples in like socialist countries where like the actual leader was setting a vision that everyone was like, yes, let's do it. And then they were like, actually, I will now be in charge. Right. So like that is like part of this paradox where like, no, he would argue, I think, that like not to put words in his mouth, but I think part of it is like, no, like the essence of his power actually is rooted because people gave him that power. They allowed themselves to be influenced by that. And then what happens after that is a little bit of a question.
I think it's interesting to note that both Moshe Rabbeinu and Shmuel HaNavi, in the end of their days, have to remind the people, saying, we had the power and we didn't.
Right.
We didn't beat you.
We
up
didn't. Right. Them. Right. Right. Exactly. So right. One of the parallels between Moshe and Shmuel is that while they're at the end, right, they're specifically saying we didn't abuse our power. We didn't, you know, make the most of what we could have. And there is this theme, right, which we're not – this is not a shir on Shoftim. But if we looked at Shoftim, right, the nature – like Gidon is the Shofate where the people are like, why don't you be the king, right? They're actually literally trying to give him the Malchus. And then he says no, and his son, Avimelech, right, decides, I will choose – right, my father should have been king. I will be the king. Right, so now Avimelech like takes it over, and everything goes haywire. Right, so right, so there is like this nature of Malchus in Sefer Shoftim as it plays into and as it carries over into Sefer Shmuel is important. Right, so this idea that true power, right, real power, real influence comes from others giving that power, right, as opposed to taking it. That is right in the Vilna Gaon's language, in a sense, that is the kavod. Right, so again, the Gra wasn't quoting a pasuk, but he really was, because this pasuk of Osher v'chavod, he's defining this word in Tanakh. So I would like to pull that back to what we started with in source 6. The Medrash HaGadol is quoted by the Ma'ayan Beis HaShoeva. So Ma'ayan Beis HaShoeva is Rav Schwab. Rav Schwab quotes the Medrash HaGadol. He goes on to, we're not going to read the full piece from Rav Schwab, but I just want to focus on this Medrash HaGadol. So Amar Rav Chama Bar Chanina. So Rav Chama Bar Chanina asks the following question. Is Moshe afraid of the cloud? The cloud covers the Mishkan and Moshe can't go in. What, is Moshe afraid? V'halo ne'amar, it says earlier, v'yavo Moshe b'socha anan. Moshe has walked through clouds before, right? What's he so afraid of? What's holding him back? Melamed, Shahaisa ha'anan nivkas lo umhalech kadam hamalech besoch shvil. Right? Really, when Moshe walked into the cloud parted for him. So there's nothing to be afraid of, right? You're not walking into the dark. He approached the Anan, and then it opened up for him. So ve'ela ve'lo yachol. So why does it say Moshe cannot go into the cloud? Melamed shachalak kavod l'shchina ve'lo nichnas ad shekrao hakadosh baruch hu. Why does Moshe not go into the cloud? Not because he can't, not because he literally can't, because he is given kavod to Hashem, right? As in deference to Hashem, Shinemar Vayikra al Moshe, because as we are about to see, again, this is, I guess we didn't spell this out, but when is Moshe called is literally next Parsha, right? It's a separate Sefer. Vayikra al Moshe, Moshe, God calls out to Moshe, right? That is the next Parsha, the next Sefer, right? I guess we didn't spell out that next bit, but...
This is similar to the Orchaim's first answer, because Bahar Sinai also was called, and at that time... That's why he went in.
So maybe it's similar in that really he is called in both times, right? So whether or not he's saying he was called both times or the first time, right, it makes sense that he would act the same way. And Amar Rabbi Chanina b'Kabbalah Shanin Mikim b'Chabdaya Chabed Zem Moshe Shechala Kavod L'Shchinav Lohigis Daito Mitchila Ve'Asof. Right, that Moshe, no matter what he was able to do or allowed to do or whatever conversation he was able to have with Hashem, he never became arrogant about it, and he always showed a deference to Hashem, even though he could have been so comfortable just walking in, but he always gave kavod. So I'd like to suggest that this element is specifically focused on here, where the pasuk says, "What is happening here with this anan? The yichas anan es ohamoid uchavod Hashem maleis hamishkan." Right. That what is here now? The kavod Hashem. What is kavod? What is the nature of giving kavod? So as the gra let us in, right? That the kavod is when others are nichnaim tachtav, when others are giving that glory, are giving that honor, are giving that power. So could Moshe do it? Yeah. Could Moshe choose to walk in? Yeah, he could. But Kavod Hashem, in order to really have the Kavod of Hashem, Moshe is saying, I could, but I'm giving you the power. Right? And this is the true essence of the Malchus of Hashem that Moshe is demonstrating for us, is that the idea that Moshe could do it, right? He is able to, but instead, he is demonstrating true kavod to Hashem by saying, not asking just what can I do, but what should I do, right? What is appropriate in this situation that Moshe is able to say, I'm actually going to wait, right? He is going to truly give the kavod. So in this case, is Moshe afraid of the Anan? So I'd like to suggest, based on the Vilna Gaon, right, is Moshe afraid of the Anan? The answer is no, but he recognizes that this is a place of kavod Hashem. This is a place of God's glory, and therefore it's appropriate that he demonstrate that kavod. And what is kavod? To choose to wait, to choose to give that power. And that gets at the nature of Hashem's malchus, and also, as we saw, the idea of true power, true influence. What does it mean to be able to work with others is not to push everyone else down, but is to work with them so that power is, in fact, given to us and not taken.
So we have to retranslate the word yachol to...